So before I get into this episode, I'd like to bring to light something I've been working on. If you're subscribed to my blog, you've probably heard of my Hunter Up initiative. If not, I'll try to sum it up for you. I'm afraid that hunting as we know it can go away, especially with the declining numbers of new hunters each year. I think it's so very important that we take the time and make a true effort to take the bull by the horns and each and every one of us personally introduce one new hunter into hunting. I'm also very unhappy with the hunting community as a whole, and its lack of respect for fellow hunters. We as a community spend a lot of time bashing each other over stupidity instead of promoting one another. The amount of energy that we spend arguing can be spent on more important things like conservation or introducing a kid into hunting. So I'm issuing all of you a challenge to take the time to help fellow hunters, introduce kids, and for God's sakes, stop promoting content that puts hunters in a bad light. Resist the urge to engage in these foolish arguments that we have. Stop the bashing. When you feel strongly about something or you disagree with a hunter, a fellow hunter, take that subject off social media, message that person directly, have a one-on-one debate about it. You're either going to leave understanding where that other person's coming from, or you're going to have said your piece and you move on. We're not all going to agree with the way others do things. And we don't have to. But what we should be doing is supporting all legal hunting because all we're doing is showing weakness and unrest within our community. And this just leaves chinks in the armor that let hunting, anti-hunting groups tear down what you have built, what we've all built. And we need to support hunting and hunters and use our efforts for good, like conservation and hunters education and introducing new hunters instead of wasting our time arguing about who predator hunts, who uses a Matthews and who uses a Hoyt. I mean, the stupid arguments that go on is just, it's okay to have debate, it's okay to have opinion, but really think about what it does when you argue on social media. You got to understand if there's something that's negative out there and you keep pushing it, I can't stress enough, if you don't understand the way Facebook algorithm works or Instagram or any of these, it's you comment on something, oh, you're an idiot for putting that out there. And you commenting on that just pushes that content up the ladder further and further until it gets wider and wider and the net gets larger and larger. And the more people can see it, the more people comment on it, the more people can see it. And eventually it's going to get in front of the eyes of somebody who's an anti-hunter and not just arguing about the hunt. And it's not good for us. So please, stop the bashing and, get out there and help introduce hunters into hunting. Thanks again. And this episode, you can thank Phoenix Shooting Bags for bringing it to you. And this hunter initiative, they're helping me out with it. I appreciate what they're doing. And let's just jump into the next episode. Thank you. Hi, welcome to Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot and Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we're at the Phoenix Ben Avery, and we're at the Shoot for Hope, Broadhead Brotherhood Shoot for Hope, and Broadhead Brotherhood friends of ours. They put on this cancer benefit each year, and it's a good cause. So we're out here supporting them because they support us, and we support what they're doing. We're talking with Dwayne Adams today, and we're going to talk a little bit about mule deer hunting in Arizona. And because Arizona has pretty diverse
habitat range, we're going to be discussing the differences of hunting them, let's say up north in the Flagstaff area or up in Kaibab versus the desert mule deer. How you doing today, Dwayne?
I'm good, John, good. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for coming up. I mean, bit of a drive for you to come up from
yeah, it's about 3 hours, but anything to help support things that you're involved in, I'm glad to come. You bet, anytime.
Oh, we appreciate you. So Dwayne and I have been friends for a long time. He's one of the guys that's helped mold me into the hunter that I am today. You know, I want to say about 15 years ago, he helped take me under his wing. He's been on the podcast a couple times and shared his knowledge with us. Actually, you were on my podcast way back when I started it, you know, like 10 years ago. And
We did
a podcast together. So real quick, just in case people who aren't familiar who you are, just give a little rundown about yourself and what you do.
I've been guiding for 38 years, and I'm one of the first people to start binoculars with a tripod. I've been glassing with a tripod and binoculars for about 44, 45 years, and we started that, and almost everybody out there today uses a tripod and binoculars. So
yeah,
I'm one of the original guys to attack that.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's in my opinion, I mean, I'd rather leave my gun at home or my bow at home than my binoculars or my tripod. No, it's definitely one of those things that's has upped the game and made people, you know, back in the day, even in the early 90s, you didn't see a bunch of 100-inch coos deers go down, you know. And now it's like every year you're seeing bigger. And it's not because the herd's getting better, I don't think.
No, it's because the hunters are getting better and the rifles are better and the archeries are better. But it also does a lot of things, John. It also lets a lot of bucks go.
Yeah.
Instead of shooting smaller bucks, a guy can just graduate up and try to kill a 100-inch deer, which is the pinnacle of most people. If they kill that deer, that's a monster deer. And then the next level up to 110, 120, there's only a handful of those guys out there killing those deer consistently. But it takes a lot of work to even get close to those kind of deer.
I forgot your book, Coos Deer. What did that score? That one that you have up in your house? That
scored 139.
139.
Yeah,
it's a hell of a. I've seen it in person. It's a hell of a buck.
Thank God.
And did you tell me that's the last one you shot?
Yes.
Yeah. When was that?
In 1976.
So you haven't killed a deer personally since 1976, but you've been part of hundreds and hundreds since then.
I've killed 525 coos deer bucks with clients, but I have killed two with a bow since then.
Okay.
I killed those in the early 80s, and then I haven't hunted with a tag myself since then, no.
Yeah.
Just rather guiding.
Just rather take other people?
Yes. Yeah. It's a lot more fun taking people than myself. I take my grandkids and take my son and my daughter. They both have killed monster bucks, and it's more fun taking them than taking myself.
Yeah.
You bet.
Cool. Well, so like I said, we're on here. We're going to talk about mule deer, and Arizona's got a pretty diverse habitat. What are some of the differences that you see, or, you know, in the deer themselves from, let's say, bucks up in like Flagstaff or, you know, Payson versus the desert bucks?
They're night and day difference, John. A lot of those country up there, you can't see good. So it's so thick that you can't set up and glass like you can in the desert. Mm-hmm. So you have to pick your places to glass in that kind of country. And that's the big difference. Where in the desert, you can just about get anywhere in glass. So that's the main difference in there, in that country. And the Kaibab, it's a lot like what you're saying, except the deer start to migrate.
Okay.
In the early season, they generally start to migrate, so they leave on the top of the plateau and start falling down into the winter range, and then they're very huntable, into the oaks and on down to cedars, into the sage. And so it's a whole different transition of hunting, and so it takes years to figure that stuff out, and the tags are too hard to come by to figure it out, to be honest with you. I tell people all the time, even if you don't hire me, hire somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the tags are too hard.
Absolutely.
You bet.
Now, a lot of people, even myself included, have done it in the past where you say Kaibab. So that gets confused with the strip a lot. That's two different zones.
Correct.
Kaibab is 12A, 12B.
Yeah, 12A and 12AW and 12A East.
Okay.
That's the Kaibab. 12B is it's not the Kaibab.
No,
that's
not.
That's the winter range out of Utah.
Okay.
But 13A and 13B is considered the strip. Yes.
And the strip is primarily glassable. You know, it's lower country, right? It's with junior.
It's just a sea of cedars.
Cedars. Yeah.
And it's very difficult. If you don't have help there, you're probably not going to kill a deer.
Yeah.
There are not a great number amount of deer out there. There's some world-class gigantic bucks, but you just can't stumble up there and try to kill a deer. You need help up there. I was talking to a guy earlier. I had a client up there about 15 years ago, John, and I was there a week before the season,
mm-hmm.
and 7 days into the hunt, I hadn't found a deer.
Oh, wow.
And finally, on the ninth day, we killed a 211. But it was four of us attacking, so it's not like what people think. It's difficult up there.
Oh yeah,
but
yeah.
We got it done, and I don't guide the strip no more. I just stay in the Kaibab. It's too far, too tough, and I would rather just hunt the Kaibab.
Too many tires.
Yeah, we tore four tires up, and you know I'd rather see 100 deer a day and try to kill one of those big bucks there.
Right. Yeah. So in the Kaibab itself, our 12A, west and east. Let's talk about that country a little bit. There's aspens, there's even places that there's spruce, right?
Well, it's 9,000 foot, the plateau's 9,000 feet, and it stays at that elevation. It doesn't drop but less than 500 feet the whole top of the plateau for almost 50 miles. But then what it does, it falls off like a loaf of bread. That's the way I try to explain to people.
Right.
It falls off thousands of feet fast.
Okay.
So every 1,000 feet, the whole terrain changes. It goes from oaks, it goes from aspens, down to oaks, down to cedars, down to sage, to cliff rows. So in that transition of from 9,000 down to 4,000, the whole thing changes. And those, you know, the way God designed that up there is probably, each time those deer move, they move to a different food structure.
Right.
And that's the whole key. It took me years to figure that out. When they're on top of that plateau, they're eating all the green stuff. But once it freezes, mm-hmm. they start to migrate. And they move to the next thing, which is higher, the oaks and the acorns. And then as they drop down, the food changes. They can start eating as it snow packs. They can eat the cliff rolls and the sage, which is the top of the sage.
Right.
And that's the way the Lord designed it up there.
Yeah.
So and once you understand that migration, then it changes the whole dynamics of how to kill those big deer.
Oh yeah, for sure. So tell me, what's your approach, you know, to a season? You know, if let's start in the archery season and kind of, how do you start hunting them in the archery season and then and kind of move me through the progression of the season?
Water is always king in Arizona. It's just king, and in August, it's probably as much king as it's going to be. So mm-hmm. water sources are, and in the Kaibab, there's hundreds of water sources.
Drinkers everywhere.
Well, the Game and Fish, with the Mule Deer Foundation, have done a wonderful job of building trick tanks up there,
mm-hmm.
and keeping up to trick tanks that were falling apart. They've done a great job up there of doing that. And last year, for example, they built three brand new ones, and they're about $40,000 a piece. So I mean, I thank God that they're putting that money forth up there for the animals. And a lot of things that people don't understand, John, the Game and Fish haul water up there when most people don't realize.
Right.
Todd Buck, I've seen him up there numerous times with a water truck during the season hauling water to those drinkers. So that's another concept that people don't have a clue that there's a lot of work goes on there to keep those deer. But water's king. If you want to hunt on that hunt up there, find a water map and set that water, and you're going to have a great chance to kill a world-class buck.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the deer are more likely to come to drinker, or some of those more natural, like seeps or springs and stuff like that?
There's not any.
None.
That's the problem with it. You can just about count the seeps and the springs on one hand up there. Okay. Big springs is the biggest one there is. It comes out of the bank and runs down, and the Forest Service have a camp right there. And there's two stock tanks right there that feeds that, and there's deer around it all the time, but you can't hunt there because that's right in the Forest Service camp.
Okay.
But besides that, There's only a handful of springs, John.
Okay.
One thing that's kind of deceiving about it, everything up there is called a lake.
Yeah,
it's Jacob's Lake, it's Bear Lake, it's Deer Lake. There's no lakes.
No, no.
The first time I went there, I took my family, they were little, with fishing rods. We were going to fish it.
Right.
And I told my wife, we'll fish Jacob's Lake or Deer. There's no lakes. There's no streams. And so that's kind of a fallacy when you look at a map and you see all these lakes. All they are is dirt tanks, but a lot of times they're empty. There's no water. So building those drinkers has been a godsend, really.
Oh, yeah. And you would think with the amount of snow they get up there that there would be some kind of lake of some sort, or, you know, way to, the water would collect somewhere. I guess that's why they're called lakes, because historically they probably were at one point.
Probably.
You know, when we actually got rain.
But there ain't now.
No. No. Do you think that the deer prefer the small drinkers versus like the big dirt tanks, or?
I honestly believe they like anything they can get water at.
Okay.
I'll give you an example of that. A number of years ago, 25 years or so ago, I was guiding a guy up there on an archery hunt, and we were setting this drinker and not having any luck. A few does came in, but there was a mud hole in the road, right in the road, there was a mud hole. And every time I went by that mud hole, there was four or five deer getting a drink out of it. Well, one morning we were going by it, and there was two gigantic bucks getting a drink in the middle of the road. And they run off, and I went down there and I told the hunter, and this was before they had blinds like we got now.
Right.
I told the hunter, I said, we're gonna go back and we're gonna set by that road. He said, by the road? I said, that's the biggest buck we've seen, was drinking out of the water. So we went and got us some limbs, we piled up a bunch of stuff, we sat down there. We hadn't sat there 30 minutes, four bucks come in. And they came in, they were small bucks, we let them walk away, and next thing you know, here come a truck, drove by. Another 30 minutes later, here come two more bucks. Before it was over with, 20 bucks come to that mud hole, and we shot a 195.
Unreal.
Off that, right in the middle of the road. So I just think it's wherever the water is, they come to it, and they, that was right on top of the plateau, and I tell that story all the time. So if you see deer tracks, and it looked like Africa where it was beat to death, I'd sit up.
Oh, yeah.
They're coming.
Oh, yeah. It's funny. Matter of fact, Anthony and I were, I had a late rifle mule deer hunt in 21 this year, and miserable. I mean, we had no precipitation for, well, you know. And we finally got a little sprinkle of rain, and there's some flat rocks where I hunt, and the water just collected in a couple of holes in the rock, you know, those cenotes or whatever they want to call them. We watched bucks climb up the rocks and drinking out of those little, just because it was the only place to get water.
Sure.
And it was just, they'll go.
People don't realize how smart animals are.
Yeah.
They can smell that water for miles. And so it's not the first time those deer have climbed up those rocks. They knew that water was going to be there.
Yeah.
And so they climbed up there and got a drink. People don't realize how smart animals are. They can smell minerals and they can smell water for a long distance. And they go, just like cattle do. That's how they move cattle, is they move the minerals. They move the salt and the cattle move with it, or they shut the water off.
Right.
It's that simple. And animals the same way. They got to get a drink. They're going to go as far as they got to go to get it.
Oh, yeah.
It's simple as that.
Very true. So I want to talk a little bit about like behavioral stuff. Do you think there's any behavioral differences between, you know, your high mountain bucks versus the desert bucks, other than, you know, food and water, because obviously they're eating different stuff and drinking more often down in the desert, I would think. But
I tell people all the time that deer are like going to a picnic. What I mean by that is that when you go to a picnic, the teenagers are playing volleyball, the young adults might play too.
Mm-hmm.
What are the grandparents doing?
Right.
They're sitting in the shade, and they go to the food, and they go back to the shade. They don't exercise any more than they have to. And I've actually found that the bucks that we're killing are the same thing, John. They don't expose themselves very much, and they've been hunted. If the caliber deer we're talking about is between 5.5 and 7.5 years old. So if they've been hunting 25 times, John.
Mm-hmm.
They're either dead or they survived. And they figured out how to survive. So I think there's only one thing that gets them out of that realm, and that's the rut.
The rut, yeah.
And there's only so many hunts, kaibab is one that you can hunt the rut and the strip.
Right.
But down in the desert, the only rut hunt that there really is during January.
Right.
And that's when these bucks that you'll see any other time you'd never see come out of the woodwork, and my God, there's gigantic bucks out there that you just appear.
Yeah.
So you better believe it. I think that you have a great chance to kill a big deer with a bow in January as you do in the kaibab and a strip in November.
Oh, I agree. I mean, you can't get me out of the desert in January. That's like my favorite place to be.
Yes.
The weather's nice.
Yeah.
You know, lots of bucks. Just good time to be out there seeing a lot of deer. I mean, for me, I feel like the easiest way to be motivated to hunt and to be successful is to be motivated is to see a lot of animals. When you go on those hunts just kind of hoping to see, you know,
I mean,
you can kill a big buck, obviously. Yeah. I mean, you can kill a big buck anywhere, but it's when you're out there and you're seeing tons and tons of deer and lots of action, it just keeps you motivated to keep on going. You spend the whole day. I mean, in January, I don't take a break, you know.
Well, and you shouldn't, because those big bucks are roaming. If they're not roaming, they're with those. And if another buck comes in, they're going to get up. They're going to be chasing around. So you have a great chance to kill a big deer.
Yeah.
I mean, every year we see a deer in the 190s up to 200-inch deer, just like the buck when you went with me, we've seen.
Yeah.
Every year we see those kind of deer. Yeah. And where those deer go, we all know they go out in the flats, and you can't hunt them there.
Yeah.
It's simple as that. But thank God they do, or they would hunt them, and they'd wipe them out. But this way, during the archery hunt, you have a great chance to kill a buck of a lifetime. I mean, every year you'll see on Facebook or on somebody's killed a 210, 215 desert deer.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just look at Chad Roberts, he killed down in the Cofas. Who would have ever dreamed as a deer grew up like that? He did, because he's put trail cameras out, he started doing all the right things.
Mm-hmm.
But those kind of deer are out there.
Oh,
every
yeah.
year we see gigantic bucks, not as big as Chad's, but we see 220, 230 deer.
Yeah.
Every year we see one of those kind of deer. You don't see them for very long, but they're there.
Oh yeah.
You bet.
All it takes is that one right hot doe to pull him out of his little hidey hole. And
if you remember, I know you do, you and my boy Luke and I think on the second or third day, we seen a big non-typical. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And you stalked in on that non-typical down there. I think a doe caught you, if I remember right, or something like that. But that was a gigantic deer.
That one that was not too far off the highway?
Right.
My knees still hurt me when I think about that buck. Because it took me like an hour to crawl in and stalk into him, because he was down in that one flat spot, and it was just all prickly pear.
Right.
And I was just going from prickly pear bush to prickly pear bush.
You did a great job. You did a great job.
And I shot and I missed.
Yeah.
Because my old rangefinder didn't have that, like, now they, you know, you can shoot through brush type thing. And I kept trying to get a range. It wouldn't give me a range. So I end up ranging the prickly pear bush that was in front of him and then guessing how far he was behind it. And I guessed wrong.
Right.
And I shot right underneath him.
But John, that was a big deer.
Oh my God, yeah.
I mean,
220.
Yeah, but we see deer like that, you know, that caliber all the time. And like you said, it was right off the highway.
Yep.
So that deer didn't live there.
No.
I mean, he came in because of the rut, and it's that simple. I mean, they come in like that every year, and they fade away back out there in those flats. But I think Arizona, I tell people all the time, has the best over-the-counter tags in the United States.
I agree.
A lot of out-of-staters can come here. You don't have to be a Dwayne Adams or a John Stallone, but you can
just, with
a little bit of glassing, a little bit of, and you can be in the middle of some great coos deer hunting, some great mule deer hunting, and have a chance for little or nothing to have a great hunt in the rut.
Absolutely. Tons of opportunity, and then you can chase pigs around too at the same time. And
yeah.
Maybe see a mountain lion, shoot a mountain lion.
Shoot lion, shoot some quail. I mean, they're
coyotes.
That's some of the best coyote hunting in the world.
Oh, yeah.
In any direction from here.
Absolutely. Well, cool. If you would, I'd like you to share with us one of your kaibab hunting stories. I remember one that you told me a while back, and you can share this one or you can think about another one, about you having to break into somebody's trailer. Because you and the hunter are going to freeze to death.
Well,
you got caught in a storm.
Well, I got caught in a storm in my early days of the kaibab. This was before GPSs and the like. And I was out on the points, and it started to snow. And we were after a gigantic buck. 230 type deer, and I crossed one road too many.
Okay.
And I didn't pay attention, and it started to snow on us, and it started to get about an hour before dark, and I couldn't see anymore. And so I started walking back where I thought the truck was, and I knew I was lost, and I was lost big time. Mm-hmm. Well, it got dark on us, and there was a trailer, and I knocked on the door. Nobody was there. So I told the hunter, let's just go in here. So we opened the door, went in the trailer, and I started a lantern up in there, started the stove up in there, and he said, you think we'll get in trouble? I said, no. I said, we're not stealing nothing. I said, we're just going to survive, because by this time it was snowing crazy outside. And I said, do you know where the truck's at? He said, no. I said, well, I don't either, so I ain't staying all night out there.
No.
So in that process, about 30 minutes later, the hunter came.
Yeah.
And he drove up, and he was, at first, he was kind of pissed off at us.
Right.
And then he said, what are you doing on my trailer? And I said, we're lost. And he said, you're lost? I said, yeah, we got lost. And I said, it's snowing so hard out there. He said, well, it's interesting you say that. He said, I almost didn't find my trailer, because a sign saying the road down here was all full of snow. And he said, it took me an extra 35, 40 minutes to find my own trailer. And I told him, I'm on such and such road. Uh-huh. And he said, that's one road to the south of us here. And I said, well, I was afraid I wouldn't find it. So he got in the truck, took us to the trailer, and back to my truck, and I went to camp. And I told him, I said, where are you hunting at? And he said, he told me some crazy place. I said, don't go there. I said, there's gigantic bucks right here by your trailer. Don't leave here.
Right.
I said, listen, I told him who I was. My name's Dwayne Adams. I guide. I said, I wouldn't be here. I said, there's big bucks right here. Don't leave. So the next day I killed that big buck with the client.
Uh-huh.
After I killed that deer, I went back to that gentleman's trailer, and he happened to be sitting there. And he didn't. The problem with him is he didn't glass, John.
Okay.
He just walked. He was just walking. So I asked him,
took his gun for a hike in the woods?
That's what he did. He just took his gun. So I told him, today's your lucky day. I said, why, Scott? I'm going with you. And he said, really? I said, yes. I took him hunting, and that afternoon he killed a great deer. We glassed a nice buck. He shot it. I become great friends with the gentleman after that. He was very nice. And so, yeah, that's a true story. We broke into the trailer, and thank God we did.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll leave you with one other thing. In the Kaibab, one of the biggest bucks that we chased, I was driving down the road in the bottom of a canyon, and it jumped in the road, and I seen the lights on it, and it went up this hill. And when I was going way down this other place to hunt, I said in the morning, we hunted down there for an hour and a half, and I went back, and I marked where that deer had crossed the road, and it was a gigantic oak thicket, just oak thicket. So I went up the opposite side of that and got up the side and glassed across that. In that course of that morning, I glassed 27 bucks. And the main road is right there, but you couldn't see up to the left because of all the oaks.
Right.
And so every hunter was driving by this road, and these bucks were all laying at the base of this hill, and they weren't being bothered. So don't let roads intimidate you.
Oh, yeah.
Always glass on the southeast side in the morning and the northwest side where they're going to be laying. And this was on the northwest side. I every year we either kill or chase a big buck in that same place. Every year. And it was all because that big buck crossed the road in front of me. And it was in the Oak Basin. 4 years ago, we killed a 231 there. Scored 231.
Really?
It had 22 scoreable points. And when we shot that deer, we drug him down to the road, and I tried to get him in the truck before anybody could see me, put him in the truck, and this guy pulled up there, and he said, you're Dwayne Adams. And he said, my God, did you kill that here? And I said, yeah, we killed it here.
No, we dragged him.
And I said, yeah, we killed it here. I didn't want him to see where he was, but long story short, just right in the middle of the road, that deer, right above the road in those canyons where most people don't look.
Wow.
You bet.
Yeah. I've kind of killed a lot of deer that way, actually.
Sure.
I always look for that place that people overlook, especially back east, more so than here, because here it is a lot of country. But back east, to get away from people, sometimes you have to go to where people don't even think about going.
Like, sure.
You know, where the parking lot is to the meet, you know, to the WMA or whatever that you're hunting.
and just, you know, or buy some houses or whatever the case may be. Yeah, and I do that here a lot, actually, with coyote hunting.
Sure.
I'll go bow hunt in those state land that are real close to houses because, well, people don't want to go call over there. We buy houses, whatever, you know. Yeah. There's always animals there.
They're smarter than people, believe
me. Yeah.
Or they wouldn't survive.
That's for sure.
It's as simple as that. You bet.
Well, awesome. Well, thanks. It's always a pleasure to have you on.
You bet, John. You're a good man. John, I've been friends for 15 years, and he's one of the good ones, and I told him that earlier, and that's a fact. There are a lot of good ones out there, and John is one of the good ones, so that's why I drove down here 3 hours to come support this for him. So God bless you, John.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks very much, and hopefully I'll draw a Kaibab tag, and you can take me.
I'll be glad to take you.
That's my next goal. I stopped putting in for coos deer hunts. Now I'm working on building some points.
We killed a 202 last year and a 213.
Yeah. Oh, I saw both those pictures.
Yeah.
Now, on that hunt now.
The archery season, which I think it's, besides the strip, I think it's the best archery hunt in the United States. And I tell people, they say, why do you say that, Duane? I said, where can you go kill a chance at a 250 mule deer? Where?
Yeah, not many places.
Not many. I mean, if you do some homework there, you can find gigantic bucks in that Kaibab, and they're all on top of that plateau at that time, so they're not falling off down the sides.
No.
So they're not spread out. They're all on top of that plateau, and the season's almost 3 weeks long, John. Yeah. How do you beat that?
No, that's tough. The second season's what, in October?
The second season is generally around Halloween, and that's the rifle hunt, and then the third season's usually around Thanksgiving.
Okay, and that's that rut rifle. That's the premier.
That's a premier hunt, you bet. But we're killing, when I told you that story about that big buck we killed at 231, that was during the October hunt.
Yeah.
So they'd fell in those oaks, and most people just drive through them. They don't think they're deer there. But, you know, that's the way God designed it. There's acorns everywhere. So those deer gorge themselves on those acorns.
Oh, yeah. What kind of points are you looking at to draw the archery yard that early season?
You can draw the archery every year, John.
Really?
Yeah, look at the statistics. It's like a 95% draw. Okay. It's every year, every year.
I haven't looked at it in a long time. I used to go up there when it was over the counter.
But this is better now.
Yeah.
Because that stopped. Now you got a higher quality of a hunter there, a guy that's serious.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not just shooting spikes and 2 points. Yeah. They're wanting to kill a trophy. They're letting a lot of the smaller bucks go and trying to kill a big deer.
Absolutely.
So you,
yeah,
you,
I think I might try that out.
Yeah.
Because actually, I remember you drew me up a map the very last year. I went the very last year that it was over the counter, and you drew me up a map, and I went and sat there. I should have shot a turkey that day, but I didn't. I had a bunch of turkey coming to a little water hole that I sat.
Yes.
That you sent me to, but yeah. Cool. Well, thanks again. Appreciate you coming on and driving up. And
anytime.
You know anything I could do for you, let me know.
Thank you. God bless you.
All right. Hey, one more thing. If you like the podcast, you will enjoy my blog, www.johnstallone.me. It's full of how-to type and tactic type articles, real honest gear reviews, and much more. Also, be sure to check out my YouTube channel for additional content from this show, plus how-to type tips, gear reviews, and my hunting adventures. So just type in John Stallone into your YouTube search, and I should pop up. Be sure to subscribe. Thank you for your support, and thank you for listening.